If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
You know what I think is actually funny about the look that we have going on right now is that we're both wearing a RotoWire shirt. We're both wearing glasses, except I look like you without like a wig on. Like you look like me with a wig on because you have the big fluffy hair.
And yeah, I gotta cut that, I guess. But
no, oh my god, that's sacrilegious, my friend. Do not cut that hair. You know how jealous I am of that.
Well, it's not that like thick or anything. It's just kind of long and curled a lot, so it kind of like. But I don't get haircuts. I just shave all my hair off like twice a year, or once a year, I guess in this case.
Yeah, I mean, at this point though, you have like that's what my back hair looks like. I mean, I don't mean to be explicit. I know this is a sports podcast, but it's, you know, I mean, at some point we're going to be brought to you by Mangrover. But anybody who tunes in to see Mario and John, I'm Alan Soslowski sitting in for John McKechnie on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, midweek edition. Of course, I'm here with Mario Puig, and we are going to be performing a 2-round mock draft for your redraft league, single quarterback league. A shocking draft. You weren't so sure when I titled this shocking.
Oh, it wasn't an uncertainty thing. I was like, if we're doing a wacky draft, that sounds fun. I mean, I could do that. but if we're doing a normal draft, I wouldn't want to get too wacky.
Yeah, no, don't get wacky. Just pretend. And also, this is the parameters for our draft is that you're not because you're going to pick first overall. Okay. You're not. And then when you pick third, that's not the same team. You're operating as an independent manager. So when you pick first, the next player that goes on your team is the player that you pick at 24.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So you're operating independently. And what this exercise really does is kind of parses out the first round. We're here in June 1st. And, you know, there's more uncertainty in what the ADP will form in round one than there ever has been before. How many best balls have you done? And have you had that same experience so far with the first round?
I actually haven't done any yet. I've had a bunch of like at home stuff to deal with lately, but I mean to get into it pretty much right now. And not that this is answering your question exactly, but I've decided this year I'm going to do a little more like wide receiver heavy early stuff just to kind of hopefully not get too many injured training camp injury running backs at high prices right now. But yeah, once I get, I don't know, 10 teams in, maybe I'll have to reassess and try to make like a responsible portfolio rather than what I usually do, which is just kind of impulse drafting my favorite guys over and over.
You hit on something that I've already, because I'm 30 best balls in already. Okay, so I'm deep. So this is perfect. So you have the person who's coming out of the trenches and a guy like you who's battle tested has not yet been in the trenches. So this is going to be a perfect, you know, perfect push and pull for sober thought and what I'm going to be a little bit jaded because I've been in the streets a little bit. Real quick, let's pay some bills. Everybody knows that the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge? Dynasty Owner is basically the next level of fantasy sports, Mario. You go in, you do contracts, all that kind of stuff. I'm doing my first team, my first Dynasty Owner team this year. So if you think you're one of the best Dynasty players, and we know everyone always thinks they are, go in there and try DynastyOwner.com. They have a very cool setup. It's not complicated. It's just more of a challenge. So that's I want everyone to go check that out. Just if you're going to go peruse the site. All right, here we go. Mock draft. This is going to be 1 QB PPR. Any other questions before we start?
No. I think I'm ready.
All right, you're on the clock at 1-1. This is a $1,000 draft. This means something. Who would you take at the first pick overall?
Well, I would take if I'm only doing like one team, I'm taking Jonathan Taylor for sure. If I'm at like 10 teams and I got six Jonathan Taylors, I might have to switch things up a little. But at the first pick, if I have one bullet, I'm definitely going with him.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think he is basically developed as the consensus 1-1 at this point, right? I mean, there is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you got to, I guess, like I said, if you get too much exposure to him, maybe you switch things up a little bit. But I just, for all the ways it could go wrong, there's of course, the threat of regression just inherently. And there's other great running backs in the league that could have big seasons and surprise us. So he's not a lock to finish first among running backs or anything, but I think his range of outcomes is generally the highest among all the players.
I used to always say that when people took Adrian Peterson number one, I said, you're never going to, like, people that are expecting Adrian Peterson to finish as the RB1 in those years, I think they were misguided. It's that he's a lock to finish as a top six running back. And that's what you love about Taylor.
That's kind of the thing with like Mike Trout in baseball or not so much this year or last year, but before that, it's like he'd always finish like second or third, but you'd always take him first because the two and the three would switch so much.
Yeah, you don't have to name the player, but is there anyone else that you could say yes or no here? Would you consider it 1-1 if you wanted to switch it up a little bit and that you would feel good
about? Yeah, it would be pretty much all receivers, I think, for me otherwise. I mean, Taylor, like Dalvin Cook and McCaffrey, if everything goes right. But I worry about certain things, durability with Dalvin, durability and even more so the team with McCaffrey. So if I'm pivoting off of Taylor at one, if I've had a few teams at the first spot and I already got a Taylor share three or four or whatever, then it's Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, and Ja'Marr Chase are all candidates at that point.
No table talk here, Mario. No table talk. You got to let the board play out as it is. All right. I'm on the clock at pick two. And by the way, if this was a super flex redraft league, would you go quarterback or would you still take JT here? I'm just curious.
I don't mean to claim to have any super flex or 2QB expertise or anything. And I don't know if that makes me a bit of a, I don't know, mark in that setting, but I would take quarterback just because I get so scared thinking about what might be left. And I can't work through a scenario in my head where I feel safe. So I take one for security reasons, basically.
Okay. Here's where the shocking draft comes in, because when I say shocking, I'm not just taking this player at number two to shock the world. I've actually done this in the best ball drafts where I have the second pick, and a lot of sharp guys like yourself are taking the receivers. I'm taking Najee Harris for the exact reason that I just told you before. You can't win your fantasy football draft in the first round, but you certainly can lose it. There is no doubt in my mind that every single week, Najee Harris has proven durable and that he is going to be ranked in all the weekly rankings as a top eight guy every single week. Now, I know there's some quarterback uncertainty. To me, that's even better for Najee Harris. And there's higher upside guys who I'm sure we'll get to, but in round one, the first shocking pick, but this is actually a player I would take, is Najee Harris. I've gotten some squinty eyes when I've taken him based on the logic that I've provided that he's a safe pick in the first round. What do you think?
I think your reasoning is totally sound. And like you said, you can definitely lose your league in the first round if you step on one of the landmines. So in Harris's case, you do worry somewhat about the explosiveness in general, and certainly the quarterback, I guess, is maybe a bit of a concern. But like you said, with his workload that he's certain to have, it basically would require injury for him to be the reason that he was a landmine in the first round, and that applies to any player.
Yep. Okay, you're on the clock at pick number three.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Justin Jefferson. I don't know if I think he has last year's Cooper Kupp season in him. I don't really. It's just that I kind of I think Jefferson is a super consistently high ceiling and high floor player who it's almost like, to me, he's one of the wide receiver categories of the Harris kind of consideration, like you mentioned, because there's just no way that you can imagine the Vikings offense operating without Jefferson pushing 10 targets a game, and he is almost a lock to be one of the most efficient receivers in the league too.
Yeah. I had this discussion with a friend of mine yesterday, and we were talking about who's going to be the first wide receiver off the ball of the board. I agree with you. It's Justin Jefferson. He was yelling and screaming for Cooper Kupp, who, by the way, I'm going to take it pick four. I'm going to take him at pick four. And, but I think that, you know, it's like, what's the outlier? See, we already have five or six seasons of Cooper Kupp. it's only one time that he's had this amazing all-time season. Most of the time, the reason his ADP was round four last year, round five, is because that's what we thought of him. Now, we know that Matthew Stafford is the quarterback, and previously he didn't have good quarterbacking, but what's the case that why didn't you take Kupp as the first wide receiver off the board?
So, if I had a bunch of teams already and a decent amount of Jefferson exposure, I would totally be okay with taking Kupp at two, even one, if I needed to. And it's not that I really expect him to regress so much. I would kind of be disappointed if he has less than 1,700 yards or you know, less than 100 yards a game. It's, for me, the knee. He's had a bit of a knee history. I'm not worried about decline or anything, but that knee has had problems in the past. And I don't know, maybe I didn't watch closely enough to know for sure if anything changed last year. But generally, the Rams have left Cooper Kupp with a lot of dirty work that doesn't really you don't see other star receivers having to block linebackers the way Cooper Kupp does. So that's a little concerning to me. But if he's able to play, I think he's infallible. I don't think there's anything that can stop the way him and Stafford were working last year. I mean, everything gets adjusted to eventually, but I don't know. I can't remember the last time a receiver was just that unstoppable who wasn't like a, you know, Randy Moss case, like just winning because they're such freakishly fast and, you know, great leapers, whatever else. Like Cooper Kupp was just, defenses could not figure it out. And I don't think they really can. So he needs to get hurt to fail. And of course, we got to be basically optimistic, I think, with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the caveat for every pick. Obviously, injury. I mean, you know, injury is a strategy in the first round because running backs do get hurt more often. But most of the time, those are the guys that win your league. Cooper Kupp certainly won people their league. If you had Cooper Kupp, you made the playoffs. If you had Cooper Kupp and didn't make the playoffs last year, things went incredibly wrong, you know? So I think one of the best signings of the offseason, non-quarterback, obviously Russell Wilson, to me, is the best signing. But Allen Robinson, I mean, that is such the undercover great signing. How do you think Allen Robinson and his end zone, his how do you think that affects Cooper Kupp this year?
Yeah, it's a tough one for me to think through because I don't really think they had a wide receiver function in the offense last year that will look like the way they use Robinson. Like, I think Robinson's addition opens up new possibilities, some functions that they didn't really show last year, because Allen Robinson isn't really an underneath laterally oriented receiver the way Robert Woods was. And I don't think they're going to get good results if they try to set up some of those borderline, you know, screen pass, these drag routes that Robert Woods would run where he gets the ball at like 3 yards past the line of scrimmage and runs for another 12. Robinson's okay at that. He's not like terrible after the catch. I mean, earlier in his career, he had pretty good runs, I think, if I remember right. So the thing is, Woods is really good at that stuff, and Woods is not as good at the downfield stuff as Allen Robinson is. And especially if you're thinking, like, you know, going one-on-one with a corner on the sideline, that's a Robinson situation. Like that's a situation Robinson can capitalize on better than Woods. So I almost am imagining less lateral route running in the offense next year, maybe more trying to like isolate vertical routes, probably a lot of like option routes and stuff like that. I'm not super familiar with the way they handle their route combos, but there might be a lot of plays where Stafford kind of has just the freedom to, and the receivers too have the freedom to kind of do like hot route, option route stuff where they kind of determine where they're going to run based on the defensive leverage. And I can kind of imagine them setting up a bunch of attempted one-on-one matchups and utilizing the run threat to like kind of keep safeties off of one player each play, and then Stafford kind of just looks for that one player each play. And if you leave Robinson in single coverage, especially on the boundary, I would say that's just tough for a defense to stop, and it probably more threatening than Robert Woods was last year before he got hurt, of course.
You know, my feeling is that, you know, Cooper Kupp was a set it and forget it player in DFS last year. I mean, it was similar to like the year that Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, like, put them in your lineup, doesn't matter what it costs, and then figure out the rest. My concern, I guess, with Cooper Kupp is that, you know, everyone saw what happened. They're going to pinch on him a little bit, and that's going to, you know, not shut him down. Cooper Kupp's still going to be a monster, but it's like, are we going to have games where they're Allen Robinson games, and we have Cooper Kupp where before you'd put him in, you'd have your, you know, lock in 24 points for fantasy. Now you're going to see a few of those, you know, six catches for 30 yards, but Robinson has eight catches for 102 touchdowns. I think, you know, once or twice a year. And again, that shouldn't deter you from taking Cooper Kupp, but I mean, what's a reasonable touchdown projection?
If you want to get to 1,900 yards, it's like you said, you basically can have no down games. So even one down game is enough for Kupp to miss last year's, historic course. So I think he was due to have like a little bit less production anyway. I don't know if it would be because of Robinson exactly as much as just kind of it's impossible to play at a Hall of Fame level, like 20 games in a row. Eventually you're going to have an off day.
Yep. Are you familiar with reality sports, Mario?
No.
Reality sports is a powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their own fantasy team like a general NFL general manager. It's time to go and see what all the buzz is about in the Dynasty community. Free agency, multi-year contracts, rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags. Think it sounds complicated? It's not. The best thing about reality sports online is you are like a fantasy front office. So it's basically takes the same amount of time, but it requires more strategy. That's what I like about reality sports. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform for you. Still not sure? You could test out your general manager skills for free in a mock free agency auction. That sounds cool. If you like what you see, use the promo code ROTOWIRE and receive 10% discount on your team or your league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. See how I worked that in?
It's pretty slick.
All right, Mario, we're doing a two-round single QB mock draft. You took Jonathan Taylor 1, I took Najee Harris. Shocking pick. You, of course, took Justin Jefferson. I think so far the best pick on the board. I took Cooper Kupp, and you were on the board with pick number 5. Who are you taking?
Yeah, I'll go with Ja'Marr Chase here. I do have him behind Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp for target volume reasons, but especially in best ball, if I've got a bunch of Jefferson and Kupp exposure and Jonathan Taylor exposure, I could take Chase as high as 1 if I'm really cornered into it, if I really need to get some exposure. But ideally, I think 5 would be a fortunate spot to get him. I think probably he's usually gone at by 4, I would imagine. I might be making that up, but
here I'll give you in a sample of 1 right here. Ja'Marr Chase went at pick 8 in my last best ball.
Okay, well I probably intend to get a good amount of Chase picks then this year.
Yeah, the reason why I think that there is some market hesitation on Chase, and pick 8 is not market hesitation, but the reason is that everybody, the sharp drafters, saw Chase go away for a few weeks. Like just what we talked about with Kupp, this actually happened with Ja'Marr Chase. We saw T. Higgins like for 4 or 5 weeks. He was the guy, and Chase was, you know, 11-point fantasy point guy. So it's not that we think that Ja'Marr Chase is not the best receiver on that team, but there are, you know, we actually have a sample of 1 where we saw that go away. And your first round pick, you don't want any weeks. You want it to be what Cooper Kupp was last week. You want it to be what Justin Jefferson this week. But like I said, the case is clear. The upside is so massive for Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I think the inconsistency you mentioned is like at once it's going to be ongoing, and also it's kind of insignificant to me just because you're getting him at a lower cost than with Kupp and Justin Jefferson. And the reason I had them ranked ahead of him is specifically because their roles are necessarily high volume all the time. There's no other way for their offenses to exist without those two pushing 10 targets every game. Whereas, and the reason for that is that Ja'Marr Chase runs more difficult routes, basically. He runs farther downfield, which makes it more difficult to just get open in the first place. And it's more difficult. It's more difficult for the quarterback to throw those routes accurately. So it's easier for Ja'Marr Chase to, you know, have a dud game because that 60-yard touchdown he normally gets was a little bit off in the wind, or Joe Burrow just kind of like got hit when he threw it and it wasn't quite there. So that kind of stuff can knock off Chase. But with Cooper Kupp, it's like if that play happens, that's fine. They'll get him on a 7-yard curl the next play and he'll run for 10 yards after the catch. Right.
And what Cooper Kupp does also, he gets like 1 or 2 runs a game, you know, too, which is like little end around, or he'll have a rushing touchdown here and there too, which again, over the course of a season adds up.
Yeah. And so it's like, I definitely agree that there's an inconsistency variable with Chase that doesn't apply to the other two, but since he costs less anyway, I think it's just kind of like, you know, if we could get Justin Jefferson at 8, it'd be great, but it's just,
oh no, that's not happening. Yeah. So, the other, all right, so I'm on the clock here at pick 6, And I, anyone who's heard any of the podcasts I've talked about, I've sworn off Christian McCaffrey in the first round, but you know, your real rankings come out when you're in the draft room. And when he's been falling to 5 and 6, I have been taking him. You know, there talk about that what I just said at the beginning of the pod, where like you can't lose, you can't win your fantasy football draft first round, but you certainly can lose it. Christian McCaffrey, there is some question marks now about durability after 2 seasons. And it sounds like that he's not going to play a preseason game. And you could easily see the case where they brought in Foreman to maybe, you know, take goal line touches. He is a pretty good back. So I'm going to take McCaffrey at 6, but I'm interested to hear your feedback on how Foreman affects us at all.
So Foreman was a pretty cheap contract. I think he's a good player. I like Foreman. I've liked him since Texas, but I think he's more of a problem for like Chuba Hubbard, really. I think the Hubbard thing is pretty much done. I don't really think he can play. But you're right. At the very least, Foreman makes sense if they got, you know, if they got a 2nd and 2 and they decided we're going to run it 2 times, it makes sense to put in Foreman there because you're running him right into a wall. So that is something that could, I guess, sap a rushing touchdown count that we already don't expect to be very high and maybe the most dysfunctional team in the league. We'll see who gets that particular title, but I got to make the Panthers the favorites because I think they are completely tail spinning in every sense as an organization. I think everything's wrong there. So
I want to ask you about that because that's a good thought. Who do you think the Panthers will start at quarterback, and who do you think they should start at quarterback in Week 1? Those are two different questions.
Yeah, so I think who have Darnold.
Corral and Darnold, and you could even talk about like a trade if you think that would happen. I personally don't, but
The Baker Mayfield thing is weird. He's difficult to move for the Browns, and I don't think any team wants to pay anything to get him. No. So
and the Browns may need him. I mean, another allegation about Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I don't think Watson's playing this year. So I don't even know what that means. Baker would play for them because he might be just so alienated that he can't. I have no idea.
Jacoby Brissett cannot bring the Browns to the playoffs.
Baker Brissett Mayfield at least can't get them to 5 wins.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so Baker Mayfield can do that. So,
oh, certainly. Yeah. Baker Mayfield might be bad or something, but he's way better than Brissett. They can't let Brissett on the field. They got to like trade for Heinicke or something like that.
Bring me into the Panthers QB world. I want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So I think it's doomed. I don't think it matters who starts, but I think Darnold will start, I don't know, 4 or 5 games. It won't go well. They'll put in Corral. It'll go worse. Maybe like 6 quarters. That'll be it for Corral. Ooh. Then it'll be back to Darnold. And then if it gets bad enough, maybe they'll go to PJ Walker or something for a game. But it's going to be hellish whatever way it goes.
Wow. That's a damning praise. So, you know, it's interesting because the Panthers have a different, let's call it, say, motivation than say someone like Atlanta, whereas it seems that the Matt Rhule and them are fighting for their jobs, whereas Atlanta is basically, I think they have every motivation to see if Desmond Ridder is good, because when they undoubtedly get a top 8 pick next year, they don't have to go quarterback if Ridder ends up being Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson, right? I mean, the chances of that are 5%, but at least you want to see if that 5% is real.
I mean, the scenario you laid out makes perfect sense. I personally don't have any confidence in guessing which way that would go. And one reason for that is I think the Falcons are going to be surprisingly competitive, like mainly because of Arthur Smith, who I just happen to think is a really good game planner. Not that I agreed with everything that he did last year, and I really hate the depth chart. I hate the roster that they went into the regular season with, but I don't know if that was more on the GM than him. In any case, going into this year with Drake London at receiver and Kyle Pitts, he's going to be turning in 22 in like October. So he's still going to be getting better all the time for the next 2 or 3 years.
Kyle Pitts you're talking about, right? Kyle
Pitts. Yeah. So him and London and Corderell, I think like Arthur Smith, I think found a way to use Corderell. I don't think that was just Corderell getting a couple lucky breaks here and there. I think Smith is a more pragmatic coach than most, and I think he can find ways to make players useful that other coaches wouldn't. With that said, they obviously have a terrible roster, and especially on defense, I would say they have a terrible roster. Even their offensive line, there's two guys, Jalen Mayfield and the right tackle, Caleb McGarry, are just absolute awful players, or at least last year they were awful. Just got Matt Ryan killed over and over. Marcus Mariota can only take so many hits, of course, so he could just give way to Ritter for injury reasons with that offensive line. But man, I don't know. I think they might be kind of like the Lions were last year, where it's like everyone, they're of course expected to lose pretty much every game, but I think they might cover more than people expect, and they might even win more games than people expect, just because I think they might be the kind of team where you will beat them if you show up as the opponent and you do what you're supposed to. But if you show up flat, if you're sleepwalking into the game, they'll, I think, beat some teams that didn't think they were going to lose them against them.
Oh, all right, man, Mario. Yeah, no, it was me. It was me.
Oh, my
bad. You're on the clock at pick six. And what I'm going to give a little behind the scenes here. Your host right here just spilled coffee on my keyboard. So I'm not going to interrupt.
No.
Yeah, it's okay. It happens. So I want you to make your pick. I want you to break down that pick. But all I'm doing is right here. I'm going to go grab a towel and clean it up. It's no big deal. Everything, all my equipment's elevated, but it is annoying. So that make your pick and I will be back in less than 30 seconds. Okay. Keep going. Make your pick.
All right. I'm going to go with Dalvin Cook here, and there's certainly concerns with him, but for me, well, geez, I don't want to just assume that legal thing with that woman that he allegedly beat. I don't want to just assume that's going to go away forever, but if it does go away, we still have to worry about Dalvin Cook's shoulder, which has been separated like 3 times now. So that's concerning. That gets it easier to separate in the future. Hits are going to knock that shoulder out. That wouldn't have, you know, before he already knocked it out 1 or 2 times. So with that said, if Dalvin Cook does not get hurt, he's just going to rake because he's an elite talent. And he's in an offense that should be totally competent at worst. It might be one of the better in the league, actually. So, yeah, I think that Dalvin Cook's usage, max range usage, can't theoretically match McCaffrey. But I think Dalvin Cook is going to be so much closer to scoring range with every touch that he gets. And as a pure runner, I definitely think he's ahead of McCaffrey at this point. I think you might be muted.
You see, sorry about that. And again, you see me cleaning up over here. It's crazy. Spilling coffee on your keyboard right here.
Is it hot coffee?
No. It was okay. Lukewarm. I've been sitting here for a while. So now I have like that smell of coffee, it's like the smell of spilt coffee. It's like, it's similar to the smell of like beer in a bar.
You're starting to smell like a laundromat or something. Public laundromat.
So your pick of Dalvin Cook, the show must go on. We're professionals here. The pick of Dalvin Cook is a sharp one. I wouldn't even blame anyone for taking him as the second running back off the board. He's so undervalued, and he's actually in our dynasty section, which you and I put a lot of content on rotowire.com. By the way, you can try Rotowire right now for free. Premium, get all our rankings, get Mario's dynasty rankings, his projections, his articles, our premium podcast. I do the Superflex rankings. Get all that for free right now. rotowire.com/try. Unlocks the paywall for 10 days. But Dalvin Cook is the player I get the most questions about in Dynasty. And what I tell people is, because everyone wants to get out on the premium asset who's 26 going on 27 years old before they have no value. Like, kind of like they think of him as like, he's going to be Melvin Gordon next year. Not true, right? So I think an edge in Dynasty is to take a look at the redraft rankings and take a look at the ADP for the Dynasty startup rankings and look which players have the biggest chasm. And those are the screaming buys. Now, Dalvin Cook is RB4 in redraft and he's RB14 in Dynasty startup. That may not seem like a lot, but at the top of the rankings, that's
like a lot. Yeah.
So do you agree that Dalvin Cook is one of these guys that's being prematurely discarded by the Dynasty market?
So not to give you a cop-out non-answer, but like one of the interesting things about Dynasty is there's so many answers that might turn out to be wrong, but at the time are totally fair and justified. There's such a wide range of outcomes. There's only so much we can know. And some of these things that we have to guess with such little information on pertain to these really volatile players like Cook. And I mean volatile mostly in a positive sense in this case, because it's like he could be the top overall finisher in fantasy and he could do it for the next, this is not likely, but like he could do it for like the next 3 years before he really starts to decline. And with that said, he also could go out in week 1, separate his shoulder for a 4th time, and kind of just have like an arthritic shoulder or something and never really never play more than like 12 games in a season or something like that. So there's with him, you know, McCaffrey too, McCaffrey especially. I mean, it's like he could finish number one by a large distance, or he could finish with, you know, four games logged. So though it's really easy to be either right or wrong, either very right or very wrong with any of these players like this. So everything, pretty much every viewpoint is permitted, I think. But if he's really going at like the 14th running back price, I think that means it's a good market for trying to win now, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get him in the third round of the startup drafts where everybody, you know, where people are reaching up for Javonte Williams. And, you know, I mean, if you're
Cook's going to have like twice as many yards from scrimmage.
Dude, Javonte Williams was RB17 last year. I mean, there's not really a great case for him to be higher than that. You know, I mean, what, RB13? I mean, you're projecting him. Melvin Gordon is Frank Gore, right? He's very capable. He's like the team loves him. He can pass block and he does everything well enough to cap the fantasy ceiling of a young running back. So you could see Melvin Gordon having that type of a career, right? Where he's the new Frank Gore.
So that would only be surprising to me for the reason of Frank Gore might've been kind of just like a one of a kind, like, you know, I don't know if he's like a gym rat or what. I don't know why he lasted so long the way he did. It's because especially that guy like tore his knee up like three times in like from like age 19 to 20. And then he plays until he's like 37. No one expected that at the time. So anyway, Melvin Gordon I think is going to be a hindrance to Javonte Williams. And if Melvin Gordon gets out of the way, Javonte goes nuts. But in the meantime, if you're trying to compete for this year, Dalvin Cook has, I would say for the next 2 years, Dalvin Cook needs to get hurt for Javonte Williams to catch him, I guess is where I'm going.
So here is why I think Dalvin Cook, your pick at pick seven, is a better pick than my pick at pick six with CMC in redraft. Is because what do we know about Dalvin Cook? People ding him for his injury history, right? They say, so if we're going to reasonably project number of games for Dalvin Cook, would you say 13 and a half is a fair number?
Yeah, I think that gives him a bit of a margin. It's like, as long as that shoulder doesn't get knocked out again, he should be kind of okay. I know he had the hamstring a couple times, but...
Well, I'm saying, if you're in charge, Mario Puig is in charge of projecting the reasonable number of games for Dalvin Cook this season. What are you setting that number at?
Yeah, I might be more of an optimist, so I might be kind of like 15 or something, but it's not unreasonable.
But everyone would bet the under. You need to set the line so people are like not sure which side to take.
14 and a half.
Fine.
Or something.
So, okay, so here's my greater point is that he gets dinged. Dalvin Cook gets dinged for his perceived, you know, games he's going to miss, mm-hmm. but there is no player. There's two players, but one player is a first round pick that has a clear handcuffed who you could get at a reasonable cost. And Alexander Mattison is that guy, right? If you draft Alexander Mattison should probably be a ninth or 10th round pick in single quarterback leagues, but you could take him in the 7th round if you're the Dalvin Cook manager, right? And you have.
So I'm looking at I'm looking at NFFC ADP from, I think, the past month. And it looks like Mattison goes just in the first 10 rounds, which I don't know. It would be great to have Alexander Mattison as a Dalvin Cook investor. That might be a little too high for me, though. That might be like a pick I need to be getting depth at receiver or something.
Fine, but what I'm saying, and I agree with that, like you should not be taking Alexander Mattison at his draft cost. But what I'm saying is that if you are getting Dalvin Cook at such a great value, pick seven, and you want the insurance card. You want the place where you know that, like, you don't even, the thing that you don't like about Dalvin Cook is that you know he's going to miss three games, or you assume he's going to miss three, four games. If you have Alexander Mattison on your bench, you're not even worried about that anymore. And again, bench size is going to play into it. It's a four bench
maybe
size.
Easier in Dynasty than redraft to arrange that. Dynasty, if you can get Cook at running back 14, just get Mattison a little bit later. And it's in Dynasty, you can find other ways to fill out that roster space. Yeah, but I think getting a big profit from Cook as it is.
The problem with Dynasty and Alexander Mattison, and this is a discussion, is that he's an unrestricted free agent next year. I think that there's a chance they let him walk. So you could be, I mean, Alexander Mattison will be 24, so that's still, he could get another
gig. Young.
Right. He can get another gig, but next year you got to assume that's why the Vikings are loading up on some of these fourth and fifth round running backs. They took what's that guy's name? It's like Nwango.
Ty Chandler. They took in
I'm talking last Wanwu. Year. Not yeah. So those guys again, you know, they'll see, and if they don't work out, they'll just draft again in the fourth or fifth round. So you have to see that they're already starting to fill the coffer to back up, because Dalvin Cook's not going anywhere. So it's an interesting debate. But what I really like about Dalvin Cook is if you're a handcuff person, it's clear, because a lot of times it's not clear, you know, like,
yeah, I don't know if anyone, some people might be looking at that Chandler pick and thinking, oh, Chandler might be the backup. He's going to be competing with Wanwu to be the third one, like special teams gunners.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So I'm on the clock at pick 8, I believe, Mario. Is that right? Let's say yes.
Sorry, I'm keeping like a list of guys off the board and not an actual order, but
we're in a PPR league. Yeah. We're in a PPR league. I'm taking Austin Eckler. There was a couple guys I was deciding between, but you know, it's funny. He had that massive touchdown count last year, I think it was. And do you want to let me look up on actually don't look it up. I want to surprise you here. So I think his rushing touchdowns were like 12 or something like that Eckler? Last year. Yes. Yeah. What was his previous high in rushing touchdowns, Mario? Take a guess. He's been fantasy relevant for – okay. It was 3.
Oh, wow.
Right. So betting on touchdown regression for Austin Eckler is a sharp strategy. He's been going in the top 5. I wouldn't take him there. Austin Eckler has been on record as saying he wants someone to relieve him, you know, and I would think that
in
means
– in the red
zone? He doesn't want to take the hard hits. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, and they drafted Isaiah Spiller. Where were you on Isaiah Spiller? Do you think he's an adequate backup, someone who could take 8-10 touches a game?
Yeah, so Spiller's history is kind of interesting. It was pretty recently that you had a lot of people in the dynasty scene, the NFL, whatever, Twitter draft scene, who were kind of hyping him as like a first-round pick or something. And that I emphatically rejected. I did not think he was anything close to that, but where he ended up going was fine, like the fourth round. And yeah, to be the kind of between the tackles specialist, you know, kind of like a backup in title, but one who's the first in line for a particular function, that's totally suitable, I think. I mean, he's definitely not some bum. He can do a lot of things totally fine. But yeah, he wasn't like a first rounder. It's just people got a little too ahead of themselves with him. Yep. He'll be better than Josh Kelly for sure.
Yeah. So I think that there's a case for Spiller, and I'm going to give you the super bold case take of that. If that does play, if he shows NFL capable, we could see because the offense is so good, the LA Chargers offense is so good, you could see Isaiah Spiller, if it works out, getting 8-9 touchdowns this season. You know, I mean, not a lot of yardage, but they could use him on the goal. And again, that's the Super Bowl case for him.
In defense of Eckler, though, I think that regression was, or sorry, the low rushing touchdown total from before, I think that was mostly because of Melvin Gordon being there.
Fair.
And I don't think Spiller's going to do that. Like, Spiller, I think, is a guy you give like 10 carries to a game and ideally short yardage in the red zone, whatever. So I do think the Chargers are pretty dependent on Eckler. If he regresses to 3 rushing touchdowns, I think the Chargers had a bad year. But yeah, you're right. He can only take so many hits. I mean, he's like 5'9", 190 or something. And
he's a fantasy football guy, right? He's been, you know, so you remember last year when he told everyone pick up Justin Jackson, we weren't sure which back to pick up. And then Justin Jackson won you week 15, which is huge. I'm going to be listening to Austin Eckler. And if he says, oh, my guy, Isaiah Spiller, man, he's going to, you know, draft Isaiah Spiller. So, all right, you're on the clock. We need to pick up
the Javonte hive has found me, man.
They're coming after you, man. Coming at you.
Yeah, draft him first overall. See how it goes.
Before we pick up, we're going to take a quick break for our YouTube audience. We're going to take a quick break for our podcast audience. Stick with us. When we come back, Mario is going to make a shocking, shocking pick at 9th overall. We'll be right back.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And we're back. So we're doing a two-round redraft, one QB mock draft. Just to give a quick review, Jonathan Taylor went first, Najee Harris second, Justin Jefferson third, Cup four, Ja'Marr Chase fifth, CMC went sixth, Dalvin Cook seventh. I love that pick. I took Austin Eckler at eighth overall. Mario, on the clock. We need to pick up the pace slightly. Let's knock out these next few picks. Who are you taking at nine?
I'll take Stephon Diggs. I think last year marks kind of almost a worst case scenario for him. And I think Josh Allen's probably going to complete a higher percentage of his passes this year for a little bit more yardage per attempt. And I think that will kind of propel Diggs more toward his 2020 numbers.
Okay. Like that pick. Can't argue. He's going to be, the market's going to be down on him a little bit because
I think he's too cheap. I think he's rich. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in some of the sharper drafts, he'll go on the 1-2 turn or, you know, I mean,
I want that pick then. I think that's a really good value.
If you're on the end cap, we'll get there when we get there. All right. I am on the clock right now. And, you know, it's funny enough. I want to call, there's a couple of running backs here who go in the second round, but I am just going to draft how I would draft. So I guess this is a shocking pick, Mario. If I'm on the clock at 10th overall, I'm taking Aaron Jones. And I'll tell you why. Oh. It's not that Aaron, you know, Aaron Jones will be splitting touches to some degree more than he ever has, probably with AJ Dillon. But look at those games that Aaron Jones had without Devontae Adams. Guess what, everybody? Devontae Adams isn't there all year.
I love Aaron Jones.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is circle of trust guy. There's one guy as of today, June 1, who he trusts, and his name is Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones every year gets you double-digit touchdowns when he combined his rushing and passing. I think that there is, if there's a player that goes in the second round that could finish as the number one overall running back, it's Aaron Jones. I'm not screwing around and waiting. If he starts to move up, I don't want to chance it. I'm going to take him at pick 10. I'm happy in the NFFC where you get third round reversals to get a late pick because I want Aaron Jones. I want a good player in the second. Then I'm going to be sitting in prime pole position in the third. Give me the quick Aaron Jones feedback and then give me pick 11.
I love Aaron Jones. I think he's almost kind of to Green Bay what Eckler is to the Chargers, to the kind of thing where if you're not projecting them to score a bunch of touchdowns, you're just not projecting that team to score a lot of touchdowns. So he's explosive. He always has been. He's been the same player going back to UTEP. Never should have fallen to the fifth round of this draft. So I think he's going to bounce back after a little bit of a down year last year.
Yeah, his ADP is 20. So it is shocking that I'm reaching up to take him there. But I think that the market is just missing on him right now. And they think that he's going to be a split guy, which could be, but the reception should more than make up for it. Give me a pick 11.
Yeah, I'll go with Devontae Adams while we're on that subject, I guess. But yeah, he's I think in for a downgrade going to from Aaron Rodgers to Derek Carr. But especially in PPR scoring, I think he's one of those first round picks that just cannot hurt you.
Oh yeah, no, it's funny because Adams is he's always been the first wide receiver, the second wide receiver off the board. The uncertainty is driving him down, but he's still Devontae Adams. I know they're
catching 100 passes at least.
Yeah.
Maybe not for that much yardage, maybe not for that many touchdowns, but he's catching 100 passes for sure if he has the 14 games or whatever.
Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to pick both picks on the turn, and then when we get back the other set, so we'll reverse the order here. So if I'm picking from the 12th spot, and I have two picks, and I'm at this point, there's a lot of different ways you can go, but it's not necessarily – just when I thought I was out, Mario, they pull me back in. Do you like The Godfather?
I am not well-versed on it, I'm ashamed to say.
But you know that line, right?
Yeah. I mostly know it through Silvio Dante.
Right. Well, that's Sopranos, man. Yeah. That's a
Soprano. No, I'm saying he does it. That's his bit in the show.
Yes. Right. Okay.
They're
fair
like,
enough.
Silvio, do the thing.
Right. Right. Very good. You know what? I thought I was about to school you here and you schooled me. So the reason why Al Pacino in Godfather 3 says just when I thought there, because he's trying to go legitimate. And I think one of the most legitimate ways to draft is don't take an early round tight end. It's so bad. It's such bad process. It never works out. I tried it with Gronk. I tried it with Jimmy Graham. It's never worked out for me, I should say. If you want a league like that, good for you. But when the minute that Tyreek Hill was traded, I was like, oh my God. Is the under over for targets for Travis Kelce is going to be like 147. He can get 107 just targets alone. He's a great player. You get such a positional advantage. I'm going to take Travis Kelce on the turn there. And then I just don't want to be left out of the running back bonanza. I don't like what happens on the way back. So I'm going to take DeAndre Swift there. I like the receptions. There's a couple other guys that I considered, but DeAndre Swift just seems like he's a good player. The Lions are ascending. They're going to use him as part of their game plan. Quick comment on that, and then you're going to be picking at the 2.2.
I'm a little concerned about DeAndre Swift. I like the talent, certainly. I think he's very dangerous when he's on the field. I worry about how much he's going to be on the field. I'm not sure he's the kind of guy who can take on the volume that's often in his prorated projected stats. He has broken down both seasons in the NFL and the 1 year at Georgia where they tried to give him a big workload. Like, he split time with Elijah Holyfield early on, if I remember right. And then he had 1 year where they upped him to like 15 carries a game and he had a shoulder issue by like October. So I'm concerned for that. But yeah, if he stays on the field, they're going to keep giving him targets. I mean, he's dangerous when he's out there. That's the one thing I'm concerned about.
I agree with you. He's got a lot of concerns, but you know, you just don't want to be the pass catching running backs do have a certain degree of insulation, but it's not a pick I love to make.
He can do Eckler stuff if the offense is healthy enough.
Right. Right. There is a case for him. So, okay. You're on the clock now. 2.2.
All right. I'll go with Joe Mixon here. I don't think he's a great running back or anything, but the usage is just so high in such a high scoring offense. It's kind of just one of those picks you don't need to worry about too much.
Yeah, that's who I was considering had I not taken Swift there. So that, you know, in these drafts, Mario, who's going in the top five, like we're taking him way below ADP in all
Swift
the
Swift is going in the top five.
No, Joe Mixon.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about Mixon for the past few picks, to be honest.
Yeah. Are you any concern about the usage on third down, pass catching? I mean,
not really. I mean, sorry, did they add anyone? I know they have P. Ryan and he was doing some of that. So I don't know. I think he's going to get, you know, 15 to 25 carries per game in any given game. And then if they fall behind, he should get a couple 6-catch games there. But yeah, I guess if they're rolling and they're kind of controlling the game, maybe they don't throw to Mixon that much.
Yeah, but I agree with you that it's such a workhorse, and the offense is just so good. I mean, they're going to be.
If it was P. Ryan, I'd almost if like Mixon wasn't on the team and it was P. Ryan in the role, I'd take him here too. It's such an envious role.
Yep, absolutely agree with that. Okay, I have CeeDee Lamb at 2.3. It's all set up well for CeeDee Lamb to get high target volume. Mari Cooper left. Dalton Schultz is the only other viable target, which we don't agree. He's not like super athletic or anything like that. The offense will still roll through Zeke, but with Michael Gallup set to miss at least till Thanksgiving, and then the only other player they really have there, Noah Brown, who was okay, and then
Jalen Tolbert, pretty much. Yeah.
Tolbert, rookie. I mean, you got to think that CeeDee Lamb, this is. If it's going to happen for
CeeDee Lamb.
Yep. If it's going to happen for him, this is the year, right? I mean, there's nothing in his way to prevent him from 140
targets. The only concern that I have is Mike McCarthy, but I don't know. They're so dependent on getting Lamb targets that it's almost like he can't really screw it. If they screwed it up last year by trying to get Cooper targets, like they were trying to force the ball to Cooper a little bit to keep him happy late in the year. That was, I think, leaving Lamb with some of the higher difficulty routes. And that's, I think, why his targets kind of fell off a little bit late in the year. But if CeeDee Lamb is going for less than 1,400 yards this year, you need to be out on Dak, too.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. If there was better offensive coaching, Lamb would be going at pick 10, pick 11.
If you gave McVay this offense, they'd put up like 40 points a week.
Right. So I'm the price of Lamb is baked into his second round cost here. So you're very happy to get him. And Dak is, if you're into stacking, Dak's a stackable quarterback. You don't have to pay the premium for him. All right, you're on the clock. 2-4. What do you got?
Scared about the foot, but I'll go with Derrick Henry and try to be optimistic about his health there.
How did I not think about Derrick Henry? I thought about him when I was taking Eckler. He goes in the top five. That might be a miss by me.
Well, it's like you said, getting those landmines in the first round is how you take your team out right away. And we don't know what's going on with that foot. They made him rush back. They shouldn't have done that. I hated that they did that. And I'm worried about his future because of it. So, and I would have been worried anyway, just because of he put so much torque on that foot, being such a freakishly huge and forceful player, so fast for how huge he is. That's all going on the foot, you know?
Yeah, so there's our shocking pick. Derrick Henry falls out of the first round, the second round. He probably won't do that, and your draft will go top six, top eight. So, okay, you know, but I do like, but there is uncertainty. I think maybe we're right about that. Like, you don't want to base your whole team on what you saw last year, because when Derrick Henry came back, it didn't look 100%, right? I mean, we're going
they
on track
him way back. It shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I mean, they needed him for the playoffs, and he is superhuman. You know, on the podcast one time, I interviewed his high school coach, and they try to scale, you know, the legendary gave him 50
carries. Did you see his high school tape?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I interviewed
some of the funniest football film you could ever see.
Totally. Yeah, I had his coach on the podcast. So it was, you know, we'd said, like, is that child abuse to give him 50 carries? He goes, listen, I tried to not do it. He would, like, basically goes,
if child you don't... abuse for the other kids.
Yes, that's what he said. He goes, you know, so he wanted more. He said he scaled it back. All right. Moving along here, we're in pick 2.4. Now, this is risk, but I think it's worth the risk. Alvin Kamara is possibly facing 4-game suspension. I'm making the number 4 up because that's what seems with his Pro Bowl incident in Las Vegas. Now, there's a chance that nothing happens. But in the second round, even if it's 4 games, I'm okay with it. He is, man. He's one of the few guys. You know, he's one of only 3 active players that has 5 RB1 finishes. Can you name the other 2 that are active players that have, I think it's so that 4, let's call it 4 RB1 finishes that are still active in the NFL. And I don't mean over one overall. I mean top 12. I mean top 12, you know, the position.
Chubb?
Nope.
McCaffrey?
Nope. Ready? Alvin. I won't keep Alvin, Zeke, and Mark Ingram.
Oh, of course, Ingram. So I think Kamara is really, really good. I think he, on a per-game basis, will be excellent. I am worried about a suspension threat. I think he got himself into some trouble there. There's footage of him doing this. He like kicks the guy like 6 times or something. And even worse, I think maybe he said that like to the police, the guy was running from me. It was like, if the guy's running from you, you're not in self-defense justification at all. So I think he's going down for at least 4. Yeah.
All right. So, but if it's 4, let's say it is 4. Let's say they announce it today and it's 4 games. Do you think pick 2.5 is still reasonable draft cost, or would you not do it at that point?
I wouldn't, but I can't say anyone's wrong to do it. I'm afraid of the risk. And part of it too is it's like he could miss 2 or 3 games because he pulls a hamstring or something.
Yeah, but that's right. And that's baked into his normal, but there's nobody else there. Right, I mean, he is the offense. I mean, you have rookie.
I guess maybe Ingram is going to get his his 5th RB1 finish this year too.
Can you believe it? You can. He's on the waiver wires in deep dynasty leagues. Like Mark Ingram, I think is a very good.
People think
very,
if Kamara's going to miss time, and we're all worried about that, then apparently we should be drafting Ingram or Tony Jones or something higher. But you don't see either of them in any demand.
Yeah, no, Ingram's an interesting, you know, week 1, week 2 play. I could see him, you know, being useful. All right, you are on the clock, Mario. We're doing our 2-round mock. We got to speed it up. We're going to try to get everything under an hour here. You are on the clock, I believe, at 2.7.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go with Chubb 2.6, here.
2.6. 2.6. Okay.
I'll go with Nick Chubb here. I know his ceiling is somewhat capped by Kareem Hunt being there. And for what it's worth, I don't expect Deshaun Watson to be playing much at all this year. So I'm not really anticipating like a 20 touchdown season from Chubb. Like I normally would if he had a decent quarterback on the field. Nor do I think that Kareem Hunt will be cut. I think that's absurd to suggest. But they could trade Hunt, and Hunt can get hurt like he did last year. And whatever the case, if Hunt is out of the way, Nick Chubb goes straight to the, I don't know, top 5, something like that. So I like Chubb a lot where he tends to go at, I guess I do every year.
Yeah, no, Nick Chubb always undervalued because he doesn't have it in his range of outcomes to finish as the RB1, but he's
if Hunt gets hurt. I mean, Chubb's a really good pass catcher. It's just he's had Hunt there to block him a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Hunt is really good, and I don't think Hunt is going anywhere unless some other team's starting running back gets hurt and they offer like a 3rd rounder to the Browns, because the Browns are going to get maybe a 3rd rounder as a compensatory pick when they let Hunt walk next year.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is, and they also have Dearness Johnson, and they drafted Jerome Ford, so they're still loading up on the back end. All right, I'm going to take Leonard Fournette. Again, this is a player that I would take in the end of round 1. He's locked in for a workhorse role with only a rookie behind him, regardless if you like Rashad White or not. Tom Brady and rookies, there's not a long track record of him being like, yeah, rookie running back, I want you pass protecting me. You study the college tape. Is Rashad White known for his pass blocking? Is he known not to be a pass blocker, or is he just somewhere in the vast
middle?
He's
the kind of guy you want running routes and getting touches. You don't really want him blocking that much. I don't know how good of a blocker he is. I just mean to say, when he's on the field, I expect them to use him because I think he's pretty dangerous, you know, from scrimmage. So I think Rashad White is almost exactly the same as Tony Pollard.
Okay, fair enough. And what we saw is when you have a workhorse like Zeke in front of him, there's, you know, Tony Pollard was not he's a good fantasy asset, but
he's overrated by almost everybody, though.
He hasn't been useful. You've had one projected start from Tony Pollard, one where you kind of threw him in your flex and you got lucky, but there was only one defined start for Tony Pollard. Leonard Fournette's
just like an NFL sixth man kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
he's good all purpose, but he's never going to take on volume. And if you give him volume, he'll fall apart.
I agree with that take. So Leonard Fournette at 2.7 is at ADP. Again, I would take him a lot higher than that, making up for my terrible miss on Derrick Henry. 2.8, Mario, what do you got?
I am a little bit concerned about this pick that I'm going to make, but I'm going to go with Deebo Samuel. I think he's awesome. I'm not concerned about his part of it. And I love Trey Lance, actually, and I expect / hope that he'll be the starter. And if he is, I think he'll, by, I don't know, October, be much better than Jimmy Garoppolo ever was with the 49ers. However, even the good case scenario for Trey Lance is one that might be bad for Deebo, just because they will throw less with Trey Lance than they will with Jimmy Garoppolo. They'll run more, and Deebo might get in on that a little bit, I guess, depending on what happens with his kind of standoff with the 49ers, you know, asking for more money if they're going to keep using him that way. I don't know what gives there, but if the absolute, you know, most destructive scenario for the 49ers happens and they have to trade him or something, I don't think he was a product of the Shanahan system. I think he's just capable of everything that we've seen. So if he's in the Lance offense, I think it'll more or less be fine, just because I expect them to have plenty of touchdowns to go around, even if he catches something like 20 fewer passes. But that reception count will go down with Lance in there.
They're getting ready to pay him, man. He put all his social media up. The trade talk quieted down. His ADP is around 13 or 15. I think you got a steal there. I love that call. Of course, it's not going to be the same type of workload, but I mean, he's still going to be a every week fantasy difference maker when he's there. There's so many different ways you can get him the ball. I like Saquon Barkley ahead of ADP. There's a lot of reason to not to pass on him there. I understand if people are cowards and don't want Saquon Barkley there, but I mean, we've already saw what his upside is, and I like the offense. I like the Brian Daboll, and I like what he could do from a passing perspective. So I'm hoping that translates into the running backs. I know that Saquon Barkley has not caught the same number of volume of passes due to injury, but also since Eli Manning left, I still think that Saquon Barkley could be, finish way ahead of his ADP. He's going in the third round. I'm happy to take him in the second. You're up at the 210, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said about Saquon. I intend to target him quite a bit, at least until his price goes up. So yeah, this is kind of a dead zone for me. I'm feeling kind of gross about all the options right now.
Good.
But I'll go with... I'll go with Mark Andrews. I'm not thrilled about taking Andrews here. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's kind of the wide receiver one for the Ravens in function, but I'm not convinced that he's going to be better enough than Kyle Pitts this year. I kind of wanted to just take Pitts here, but I know it's too early, so I'm going to take... Maybe let's say I'm in this is not NFFC or something. It's a league where I can trade, and maybe I'll take Andrews here and see if I can kind of get the Pitts owner to give me a backup running back or something.
I'm going to teach you a lesson right now, Mary, right? You've been doing this longer than I've been even thinking about fantasy, but I'm about to teach you a lesson. I'm taking Kyle Pitts at 211.
Oh God, no.
Yes. And I would have, I almost thought about it the last pick. So get your guy.
Which love Kyle Pitts.
Yep. Yeah. And I hope that made you feel horrible that I'm taking him here.
It actually made me feel better. It makes me feel less crazy for thinking so long about taking Pitts instead.
Yeah. You know what it is that it's the second round is where I'm willing to take that big swing, because I know I will take a safer guy in the third round. Now, I always advise people take a, not Don't swing for the fences. Take a safe floor in the first round. And then each round, your upside quotient, your risk quotient should increase. Kyle Pitts is the perfect upside quotient right here. Now, I think he'll go a little bit later than this. You would probably, in a real draft, get a swing at him in round three. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take him here. I had him queued up. You could easily see the case where you're like, oh, my God, this is a first-round tight end next year. So I'm going to take him at 211. You have two picks on the turn, and we're right under the number. We're right under an hour here, so this is perfect. Okay. So you're on the turn. You took Taylor at you took Taylor 1-1. Who the heck are you going to take on the turn here?
Two picks. I guess I got to go receiver. I'm going to be maybe a little bit unconventional and go with Mike Evans, even over Tyreek and whoever else, just because I hate Tom Brady. I'd love to see him do terribly this year, but I bet he won't. I bet he's going to throw 40 touchdowns or something upsetting like that. And if he's throwing however many touchdowns, 32 plus, and Chris Godwin is playing less than 750 snaps on the year, necessarily...
Godwin got hurt, week 14 last year or something like that?
I think he might be back. I mean, some of these ACL returns and Achilles returns have been happening really quickly lately, and he's a young, really athletic guy, so we'll see. But in any case, if we're as worried about the Buccaneers as we should be, or as I am anyway, and if we think Godwin is anything but a lock, then the slack necessarily falls on Mike Evans, or so that's how I see it. So I think Mike Evans is like a clear Hall of Famer. I'm very high on him in general. I think his numbers have been less than his abilities just because, I guess, because of Godwin mainly. But if Godwin's out of the way, I think Evans is totally prepared to pick up all of that slack and more.
So I know that you thought that was a shocking pick, and it is. You know why? Because in my last draft, somebody took him at 2.9. You got him at a value. You thought you were reaching. You got him at a value.
Yeah, I don't think it's – I guess, to be tedious, I don't think it's a reach. I definitely stand by it, but I can understand why someone would be like, you know, you should take Tyreek or somebody instead.
No, that's all quarterback driven. I mean, Mike Evans is for me, would be solidly over Tyreek Hill just based on the quarterback alone. I mean, never bet against Tom Brady is a good bet until it's not a good bet. All right, you're on the turn. So you have Jonathan Taylor. You took it 1-1. You came back and you took Mike Evans. Who would you start the third round off with given that team build?
Maybe I should go receiver. I'm not sure, but to be shocking yet again, I guess I'll go with Breece Hall here.
Yep, there you go.
Just because I think he's clearly a very good three-down prospect, and I find his critics kind of annoying, the people who criticize that pick kind of annoying. So I'm definitely rooting for Breece Hall to get a Edgerrin James-style Rookie of the Year award to make them hopefully stop talking.
Well, I actually got a dynasty trade. I want to run it by you. Maybe this helps someone out. I'm in a league where we just started, but the guy who has 1-1, obviously that's going to be Breece Hall, and I have 1-3 because it's a new league. I wanted Breece Hall, and he's agreed to move back the two spots. So let's assume that's going to be London, okay? Well, just for these conversations, he wants to, in order to swap places with me, he wants Zeke Elliott as the tack. So basically, it's London and Zeke for Breece Hall. Which side of that trade do you like better for Dynasty?
London and Zeke, mostly that's because I'm just very high on London too, and I guess I have some sort of Zeke truther thing going on too, but love Breece Hall.
But you take the two players because depth...
I'm super high. I think there's a case to make for taking London 101. I would take Hall 101, but if someone took London first, especially if it's a two running back, three receiver league, like how are you going to say that's a bad pick? I wouldn't.
What if London went off the board at two and that pick now is Kenneth Walker? Would you do
Don't
Walker?
Like that as much. I like Ken Walker enough, but I think Hall is a notch above him. And in the case of Walker, it's like you need Penny to get hurt. You need
– Which he Chris already Carson's is, by the way. He already is. Penny's hurt already.
He's back in practice already.
Oh, okay. He's back.
But yeah I like Walker. I think it was a justifiable pick by the Seahawks. I was a little bit pissed off at the time. I was like, God, why didn't you let him go to a team that's just going to feed him right away? But it's fine. He's a good player, but he can't have like the three down projection that Hall does. Not right now anyway, I don't think. It's an unknown whether Walker can catch or pass block at all. Whereas with Hall, you don't have to wonder.
All right, everybody, you've been listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast Midweek Edition. I'm Alan Cislowski. You can follow me on Twitter at Alan Cislowski. I'm sitting in for John McKechnie, who normally does the podcast with Mario. Mario, what's your Twitter that everyone should go follow you on?
The Posting Scout, and they should not follow me. But...
Yes, they should.
They can, I guess.
It's linked in the video description below. And three other things quickly I want to urge people to go check out is that we just put out a two pieces, and I want actually start with yours. What writing piece do you want people to go check out? And I'll link it in the video description below.
I've been doing magazine stuff for the past couple of weeks, so
Go buy the magazine. Go buy the magazine.
Well, the Drake London scouting report. I try to do like deep dive player scouting reports. Like Drake London, Gabriel Davis were a couple of recent ones. Zay Jones I did earlier in the offseason. That I think holds up best with me.
How high should people take Gabriel Davis in redraft? What round should they go get him?
I would take him a little higher in best ball because I think
regular redraft.
Oh, sorry, regular redraft. I don't know, maybe like the fourth round, depending on how many receivers are already off the board.
Okay, I like that. I was going to say fifth, but I like your aggressiveness.
Depends on how many people. If there's other guys that are better, take them first, you know?
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. All right, and we just put out a Dynasty rookie mock draft. You participated in that. I'll link that in the video description below. You can see if you have a rookie draft coming up, all the RotoWire writers participated in a 12-team rookie mock. So you could see where there was some good, interesting picks in that one. David Bell got pushed up to the first round. I thought that was a little surprising. I see the case. I personally wouldn't do it, but I like the aggressiveness there. And you could see where all the quarterbacks went. It was a super flex draft. And also, I just put out a dynasty trade chart. I mean, you get it all the time. People say, hey, what can I get for this veteran? I'll link it in the video description below. I put by ADP the top 60 players and then gave you a suggested cash out for those players. And I ranked all and put all 32 quarterbacks from a super flex perspective, what you could expect to get on the open trade market. These are all based on real trades that I have either participated in or saw in other leagues. So check those two items out. John McKechnie will be back next week with Mario doing his regular gig on, what do you guys record on, Wednesdays, Thursdays?
Yeah, Wednesdays.
Okay, and I will be back on Friday with Joe Dolan from Fantasy Points. We're going to be doing a Dynasty podcast, so please check that out. Every Friday, we post a new podcast and new live stream. And anything else, Mario, before we get out of here?
No, thanks for stepping in for John. It's always good to podcast record with you.
I love it, man. I love working with both you guys. It's my favorite. All right, everybody. Thanks for coming and checking us out in the live stream. Shout out to everyone in the chat. And feel free to comment which picks in our mock draft here that you liked and which ones you thought were donkey picks. Mostly Mario's picks.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.